welcome to another episode of Quantum of Solace. I'm Al Smith. Now, while we normally record this programme on a Thursday, I'm usually joined in the studio by David Robertson. David's not here today because he was riding his bicycle far too quickly through one of the beautiful graveyards in Dundee. He managed to avoid the council van, but he couldn't avoid the gravestone. So he's currently sitting at home, nursing a bust-up collarbone. David, I know you'll be listening at home. I think it's time to indulge your charismatic side. I think you need to take that as a sign from the Lord that you need to slow down. And I couldn't think of a better song to begin with than this. Bicycle, bicycle, bicycle. I want to ride my bicycle, bicycle, bicycle. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like. Get well soon, David. You're speaking at the Solace Conference a week on Saturday. That's on Saturday the 29th at Charlotte Chapel in Edinburgh, along with Ed Shaw. The conference is on sexuality, society and the church. And you can find out more information and book your tickets at solace-cpc.org/events.
Be clear on what the Bible teaches and be clear that the Bible says that sex is for marriage. I find it really, really hard when church leaders who I respect dodge the issue and don't teach what the Bible says. He seems to be afraid of saying what Christians have always believed. I found that really painful, that they're not willing to tell it to me straight. The other thing that church leaders can do, something that's really helped me, is a conference I was at, I think about 4 or 5 years ago, when one of the platform speakers just described people who experience same-sex attraction and yet are sticking to what the Bible said. He described us as the heroes of the faith. And that was an incredibly encouraging thing to hear from a respected church leader. It was just a throwaway remark, but it was the sort of remark that stayed with me, that kept me going, and that stays with me still 4 or 5 years afterwards. So be affirming and encouraging of people like me who are trying to stick to what the Bible teaches.
So that gives us an opportunity for the rest of the programme to do something a little bit different. Today we're bringing you an interview about church planting that David recorded in the studio a couple months ago with Norman Mackay, who is a Free Church minister and a church planter in Govan in Glasgow. And the sun, it never shines, and the wind, it always blows. The treasure that you're looking for is right under your nose. But the green,
well, welcome to Norman Mackay, who is here from Govan. And for those who are not educated in the finer parts of Scottish geography, tell us, where is Govan? Tell us a wee bit about Govan.
Okay, thanks for having us along, David. Govan is on the south side of Glasgow, but Govan really, in terms of where we are and how local people regard it, is 2 miles from the city centre, across the River Clyde, and it's been known historically for its shipbuilding.
When I hear Govan, I think Ibrox and Rangers. So is this a kind of unionist Protestant type area?
Actually, Govan, in terms of how local people would understand Govan, historically has been precisely the opposite. Govan largely has been a Roman Catholic and Irish area, although it was also populated by people from the islands and some Ulster Protestants. Generally speaking, as a rule of thumb, if you go to Kinning Park, which is just up the road from Govan, that's a Protestant unionist area. And some people class that as Govan, but local people within Govan would not consider Kinning Park part of that. So if you wanted a wee geographical map in your mind, local people would tend to think of Govan as Central Govan, Linthouse, Chooker Hill, Drumoyne, and a place called the Wine Alley. Put those areas together, you've got Govan. You've understood.
Just, I love those names. Absolutely love those names. What are you doing there? What are you doing in Govan?
We've gone into the area of Govan to address some of the needs there, spiritually and socially. And we're there to start a church, and we've been there for about 1.5 years. I'm actually from Govan myself. My father's from Govan, my grandfather's from Govan. And so having left the area when I was a teenager and become a Christian just after that, I've now come back into the area to commence a church planting venture.
The fascinating thing for some people is that you are a free church minister. And again, for those who don't know their Scottish churches, some people think, well, wait a minute, isn't the free church like uber Protestant and anti-Catholic? And isn't this like you being thrown into the lion's den?
Well, not at all. I came into the free church about 10 years ago. And the Free Church is essentially an evangelical church, a movement that preaches the gospel. Our church down in Govan actually consists of a whole plethora of people from different backgrounds, Irish Catholic backgrounds, a couple of Protestant backgrounds. And so, no, there's nothing of that nature in our church whatsoever.
Do you think, I mean, we're talking about Catholic, Protestant, and maybe for someone from the west of Scotland, that makes sense. Other people are looking and saying, nah, nobody's really interested in religion anymore. That doesn't play any part, but that still plays a part in your culture, yeah.
It's probably not so much about believing, but belonging.
Yeah, identity.
Identity, yeah. And people have an identity with communities that they're rooted in. And so to some extent, there's a fusion of ethnic identity, religious identity, that kind of thing. But in these days, what we tend to find, it's more about belonging than believing.
Right. Now, you're planning a church in that context. Obviously, you don't go out and just hire a church building, or do you? Go out, hire a church building, put up a sign saying, Govan Free Church, all welcome here. I mean, what have you done? What do you do?
We don't actually have a church building as such, because very often, you know, you have a church building and local people don't come across the doors of the church building. So that would be something we would have viewed as a disadvantage. Mm-hmm. What we have done is we've gone into a building within Govan that's well known and well accepted within the community. It's an iconic building. It's called the Pierce Institute. And within that building, there are lots of agencies who have Govan at the heart of their various organizations and their ministries. And so we are in the Pierce Institute and we run all our activities from the Pierce Institute. Now, what that does is say to people that we're concerned about Govan, and at the same time, we're non-sectarian because we're in a neutral premise. And so that's where we find ourselves to be.
How's it going?
Yeah, really good. We moved there about 2.5 years ago. We started with nothing. We had no resources, we had no people, we had no funding, no books, Bibles, anything of that nature. But what we did have was a very powerful conviction that God was leading us right back into Govan. This venture didn't start with me reading some kind of popular book on church planting, anything of that nature. It was a sovereign call of God that brought me back to the community that I was raised in, in order to seek their welfare. So how is it going? 2.5 years on, we have a number of ministries operating from the Pierce Institute. We also have now a Sunday service that's been running for about a year. And probably if everyone is there who would want to be there, we have 25 to 30 people. Mm-hmm. And the good thing is the vast majority of those people are native Govanites who are drawn from the community and are well known within the community. The church is very well received and highly spoken of. Mm-hmm. It's known as the wee church with the big heart. Mm-hmm. And so we're very much involved in the community, and we actually love the people down there in Govan. So we're very happy there, and the work is prospering.
This is a maybe slightly difficult one, but it can become, how will I put it, trendy in for Christians from middle-class backgrounds to get a kind of poverty chic and think, oh, we're going to go and plant churches amongst these poor people and be quite patronizing. Mm-hmm. I mean, the answer is almost obvious because how you avoid that? You're from Govan initially anyway, so you've obviously got a good understanding. Mm-hmm. But do you understand what I'm saying in terms of the difficulty that exists? Have you come across that at all?
Well, we have come across that a little bit. My grandfather's from Govan, my father was from Govan, so I know the culture a wee bit from the inside, and so that wasn't a difficulty for me as far as I could tell. We have had folks come and join us who are from a totally different social background, and they've done really, really well.
Yeah, because that's not a problem, is it? It's the attitude
it's
you come
the attitude.
With.
Yeah. We have had other people come in, probably have had this romanticized view of what it means to reach out to people in these communities. And that can be quite patronizing, and the kind of approach they can take can almost assume that because folks don't have a high level of education, that they don't have any wisdom or they're unintelligent. Yeah. And that very quickly puts people off. Yeah. You have to share yourself with people genuinely.
Yeah.
And become friends to people. And if you can do that, then you can win people's hearts. Yeah.
Just in terms of, you know, how you develop church and so on, you'll find a lot of people in different aspects of a community like Govan will already belong to quite strong communities. It might be a drug community. It might be a gang. It might be different, you know, it might be more positive things than that. Coming into the church, obviously, once on a Sunday is not going to cut it. How do you create community? Or would you argue it's the gospel that creates community? And but you have to make, do you know what I'm trying to say? It doesn't just happen.
Well, what we have found to be profitable and helpful is that we went down there as a family, and in our minds, our picture was quite simply that people would basically join our family as they got to know us. And so that tests the authenticity of our faith. And what has happened then is that our little family has grown to be a spiritual family. We're there 7 days a week. Our office is open all the time. We do things together. So the concept of community is vital, but it has to be a genuine community within which people feel loved and accepted. And that's how we function. So in many ways, our wee church, probably to the outsider, apart from the Sunday, looks like a recovery group.
Yeah,
because we're all in there together and we all share together.
Yeah,
and so community is very, very important.
Sort of like CA, Christians Anonymous or something.
Yeah, something like that, except we're not too anonymous down there.
Not too anonymous. Now, there are Christians who will watch this to go, oh, that's great. That's just what I want. Community and reaching people and sharing the love of Christ. As long as you don't bother with all that Bible teaching and stuff. I mean, are you still a Bible teaching church or have you given up on that? Have you gone all liberal?
No, I don't think we're going all liberal. Certainly hope not. No, right at the heart of what we do is the Bible. We have discipleship courses. We have Christianity Explored and we have our services on a Sunday. So although we talk about recovery, it's recovery that's sourced from the truth of the Bible and supported by the truth of community. So no, I guess what I think we are at is we're probably back in the Gospels more than in the Epistles.
Yeah.
Because within the Gospels, you have Jesus. I'm not suggesting that's me, but we have Jesus and people gathering around him and learning from him in the context of their circumstances. And so I think that's where we're at this stage.
Yeah.
People, they become Christians. They know very little about the faith. And we try to disciple them through the scriptures, but a little bit at a time that's appropriate to the struggles that they might have or the questions that they might be asking, which may be quite different from the questions that traditional church people ask.
They were drinking his wine. They were using his name. They were taking the time to take his name in vain. Look what the good people done to him. Look what the good people done to him. They will have enough fun. Look what the good people done.
Maybe one last question, because I mean, I could talk about this forever. I mean, I just find it fascinating what you're doing, and we want to see this replicated, not just all over Scotland, but all over the United Kingdom. We, in Solas, people might say, oh, you're an apologetics thing, so that's kind of like highfalutin, you know, professors arguing about physics and the cosmological argument and stuff like that. What role does what people understand as apologetics, we prefer to call it persuasive evangelism, have in a community like Govan?
I think the first thing that we need to see is that folks in communities and housing schemes have got exactly the same questions that other people have by virtue of the fact they're human beings.
Suffering,
emptiness,
the existence of God.
That sort of thing. Lots of folks have encountered the law of sowing and reaping in these communities. And so people have actually very real and very powerful questions they want to ask because they're encountering life, and life as they know it requires answers.
Yeah.
And so the role that we have, as you rightly point out, is quite simply to be there with the scriptures and try to address those questions as best we have. I'm reminded that within the scriptures we're told to always be ready to give an account for anyone who asks you for the hope that's within you.
Yeah.
So that seems to be inclusive and expectant of not just one category of person answering questions. And within Govan and on the streets, What I find is people actually have very, very relevant questions that the Bible speaks to in a very powerful way. So that's where Jesus was. He talked with people who were quite different to him. And yet, when you look at the questions people ask, there's a seeking within the lives. There's an emptiness within the lives. There's sometimes unresolved guilt within the lives. And so all those things are largely the same by virtue of our human experience. People may not have a high level of education, but they certainly have a high level of searching and asking about the meaning to life.
Yeah, and I think people need to be very careful about equating a high level of education with intelligence. Mm-hmm. It's possible. There are many people who are very intelligent who may not have a high level of education.
Yeah,
And also, we need to be wary of the fact that we see people in a holistic mm-hmm. sense as well. So, Norman, we love what you're doing, uh-huh. and I think we have a lot to learn from you, and I hope that we'll be able to help you. I hope that you'll be able to help us, and that we'll keep in touch, and I hope that your work will be part of a work that occurs throughout Glasgow and throughout the rest of Scotland, particularly in the housing estates and the communities where people maybe have often been neglected by the church. Maybe not always, but sometimes they have been. And you know, may God bless you and thank you for being here in sunny Dundee, and we'll let you get back to Glasgow.
Thanks very much, David. Have a good day. Cheers.
Yo. We're part of a culture that really loves to hate us. Every chance they get, they attempt to isolate and debate us. It's not that they don't like us, it's just they don't like God in us. It's common knowledge, and oddly enough, it makes a lot of sense to a lot of us. We completely understand because we used to occupy the same space and lived in a similar type state until we tasted of God's grace. So we continue loving this world that so easily rejects us and passionately press past the lack of their cultural acceptance. And as if there weren't enough problems for us gaining influence, we keep fighting over the issue of what's too worldly of a Christian to make a difference. So no matter how you paint it, or politically campaign it, whether you water it down and drain it, it's really all the same, ain't it? It's the same frustration, same constant segregation. Christians living like aliens trying to relate with citizens of a different nation. What always makes for a better presentation than bark and bite is a proper understanding of living life filled with salt and light. So we walk this fine line of walking in light of God's kindness and live with a sense of worldliness without the fear of compromising. Loving God and neighbor until Christ comes to split the sky or die in a society hailing Jesus as Messiah. Yep.